John Huckenberry here, and at thetakeaway.org, we have a special feature for you, an early look at a remarkable investigation from our partner, the New York Times. Organ trafficking, a global trade in cash for kidneys, a story that takes us from Israel to Turkey to Sri Lanka and Costa Rica. Kidneys are trafficked largely because of worldwide demand and because people can live with a single kidney, and so that other kidney can be sold to the right unscrupulous broker. Now my conversation with Kevin Sack, investigative correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. He and his team spent a year uncovering a chilling trade in human organs.
It's all supply and demand. I mean, this really is, to some extent, an economic story. The World Health Organization estimates that the supply of available organs fills maybe a tenth of the worldwide need. And that adds up to just tens of thousands of people every year who are on dialysis, on waiting lists, and have no prospect, really, of getting a transplant anytime soon. And people want to live. It's their desire to live and to live a fulfilling and healthy life.
And the narrative in your story is really like the Bourne identity. I mean, there's cities all over the world where this trafficking takes place. Give us a little bit of a tour guide of where we go if we're trying to get a kidney.
Well, we decided that the most effective way to explain to readers how organ trafficking works was to take a single case study. So the network that I looked at was one in which mostly Israeli recipients, although not exclusively, engaged Israeli brokers who sent them to Costa Rica, where they were hooked up with a prominent nephrologist there, who in turn had a system of finding donors among poor Costa Ricans who, just as those who need organs are desperate, these recipients are very desperate too, almost always in some sort of significant economic distress. And they were paid for their kidneys. The Israeli recipients and those from other countries would fly to Costa Rica for several weeks to receive the transplants there.
And this trafficking and these transplants were hidden in a whole industry of medical tourism in Costa Rica for things that are perfectly legal, like root canals and tummy tucks and plastic surgery, right?
Exactly. Costa Rica has developed a really sophisticated medical tourism industry over the last decade. Because of that, they've got an infrastructure there. They have several private hospitals that are accustomed to dealing with foreign patients. The other thing that sort of drives it from Costa Rica's angle is a real financial incentive for the doctors and hospitals that are involved. Doctors in Costa Rica, or at least specialists like nephrologists and transplant surgeons, are assigned to one of the country's public hospitals where they receive a salary, and it's not a particularly high salary, certainly not compared to their American counterparts. But there are also private hospitals where they can work after hours, and there they're paid by the case. So the more foreign patients they bring into those hospitals, the more they make.
The mechanism in Costa Rica for, or mechanisms in Costa Rica for harvesting the kidneys are amazing. I mean, one in particular involved a taxi driver named Mrs. Cordero.
Right. There were two recruiters that the nephrologist in this case, Dr. Mora, had connections to. One was, in fact, Ms. Cordero, who was a police officer by day and a taxi driver by night. And yes, she occasionally would solicit fares in her cab to become donors. She would start conversations with them, according to the prosecutors down there, find out that they had some sort of financial need, and then would eventually connect them to Dr. Mora. The other recruiter owned a pizza place across the street from the public hospital where Dr. Mora worked. And he, according to his attorney, received a call several years ago from a relative in the United States who needed a kidney. He started asking around among doctors who were his customers and was eventually referred to Dr. Mora.
How much does a kidney cost in these networks, as you discovered?
It varies. The people that are paying for the transplants would pay anywhere from $100,000 to $200,000, although we actually found a gentleman from Texas who had arranged to pay $330,000 for a transplant. The amount that goes to the donor, the quote-unquote donor, is a small fraction of that.
In the course of your investigation, if it is the case that you can't put a price on life, Did you at any point find yourself sympathetic with people who claim they're helping people to live, whatever the cost and whatever the tactics?
I felt very sympathetic for the patients who felt they had no choice other than to buy organs in order to live. Certainly the brokers all argue the same case that you just made, that they are saving lives, that they're filling unmet need. That said, they're making huge amounts of money. They are motivated at least equally by greed as by any good intentions.
What are the authorities doing about this in Israel and Costa Rica and even globally?
There are ongoing investigations in both of those countries. I expect indictments pretty soon in Costa Rica against the doctors and recruiters that were involved down there. Israeli prosecutors are also looking at the brokers. Worldwide, it's very difficult to make these cases, and there really have only been a handful over the last decade, decade and a half of significant prosecutions.
How would you characterize the exploitation and victimization of the donors in these cases?
They obviously go in with their eyes partially open, but only partially. There is oftentimes very little discussion of the medical risks that they would face. There's very little discussion of the aftercare they need. And these are, you know, somewhat risky procedures. It's painful. And there is, you know, as with any significant surgery, a risk of death and injury. And typically folks do not know much about that.
Well, it's a really sad global story of desperation and victimization and, you know, greed. Costa Rica has recently cracked down on this. Do you suspect that it will just pop up somewhere else?
That's been the history. It's been impossible because of the economic that we talked about, the terrible inequity between supply and demand. It's been just impossible to smother this kind of activity. And typically when one country cracks down, the brokers find another one that's willing to take them. There's too much money involved for them not to find a place to go.
Kevin Sack, investigative correspondent for our partner at the New York Times, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, John.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.